Hey, this is Chase Barber.
And I'm Jordan Willey.
We're two blue-collar boys doing some blue-collar interviews. All right, welcome to Blue Collar Interviews. Now that we got the audio figured out, we can introduce our guest, Busted Knuckles. Why don't you introduce yourself there, Jeff? And first off, we got to start off
your TikTok. We're doing this right off the bat.
We'll check you out.
Right off the start.
Yeah, we'll right do that right away.
All right, so my name's Jeff, power generation tech. I work on generators and stuff, fuel systems. It's about all I got.
Okay, did you give your TikTok there? I didn't hear.
He did. It was Busted Knuckles Zero.
Oh, that's all it is. Okay.
Yeah, that's all it is.
All right, well, go pause it and then check them out on TikTok. Give them a follow and then come back here right now.
Boom, they're back. That was so quick.
Yeah.
So fast. Jeez, it's dumb. Anyone who's not on TikTok is like, just get to the interview, damn it.
We did. I mean, that was 20 seconds. I mean, do we really have a lot of followers that aren't on TikTok? I'm genuinely curious if anyone's like found us just by like scrolling through podcast suggestions.
I do not know about that. I do. I've done Instagram ads. I wonder if guys have picked us up through that.
Oh, maybe.
Interesting. Okay, anyways, Jeff, sorry. We should probably interview you. So you work on generators. Is that how you guys got linked up, Chase?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, that's how it all started out. And it was funny because actually a couple months before he started following me, I had a real small account. And I made this joke video about putting in a generator to a pickup truck and then just wiring it straight to the motors and using a potentiometer as a gas pedal.
Oh, man, you're here for money. You want in now, don't you?
No. Well, no. Then I was like,
just kidding.
I was like, dang, like, dude, like, took my idea and approved it.
Oh,
no, all right, well. I can respect it. Game recognized game.
That sounds like a lawsuit waiting to happen.
No.
Well, I guess it depends when that video was posted, right?
Yeah. I'm just kidding. Stop. To be fair, stop.
Now, this is one of those ideas where, like, even myself, I'm like, and everybody's saying, like, why hasn't this been done? Like, people have been saying this for years and years. Like, what? Freight trains have worked, diesel, electric.
You got to have the drive.
Porsche had a. Yeah.
You got to have somebody with the initiative to actually take this idea and go out and like, all right, well, if it's such a good idea, let's do it then.
Yeah. And in the 80s, big oil might have shot us. So, like, you know, it's kind of nice to not have that as scary now. Big oil not trying to kill people who are not doing just gas guzzling vehicles.
And
not
and,
yet.
And anything, big oil's now protecting us because they're like, oh, well, at least they got some form of it.
Yeah. Exactly. Hey, they still got some diesel. Hell yeah, let's go.
And see, that's my other thing with like, these all-electric cars, with people that are saying, oh, we can completely never rely on big oil again. Like, well, these things still take things like, I don't know, wheel bearing grease? Like, don't you need petroleum products to make grease?
Wow, well, half thick. Of it, yeah, I half mean, of a Tesla's interior Tesla. Is plastic. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, wasn't it the, I believe it was the CEO of Esso, Imperial Oil. It might have been Esso. Don't quote me 100% on who said it, but... One of the CEOs of an oil and gas company came out with a statement and said, in the next 30 years, oil will be too valuable to use as fuel.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Like, well, and he was talking about the rise of India, China. Now, people that live in India, China, the rest of Asia, and even Africa, the other, you know, 7 billion people in the world, are wanting the same level of lifestyle that we have in North America. And a lot of people are finding out that they can push these disposable products, a lot of plastic-based products, a lot of, like, you know, what we just assume is normal here, are going to the other 7 billion people, which means that if 7 billion people have our level of consumption, which is heavily plastic-based, there will be so much of a demand for oil that it'll make fuel basically too expensive to use on a vehicle because all the other oil applications are out competing fuel as demand. So it's, and it makes sense because gas is a lot of one of those byproducts of oil and gas.
That does make sense. That is interesting.
Use the gas part of oil and gas for power generation, use the electric cars that from the power, and then use the oil for all those oil-based byproducts, the plastics, the grease, the everything else that comes out of it.
Everything else that's made, yeah.
Well, see, here's the other thing with power generation being, like, using oil and gas for power generation, too. So, like, I've got a unit right now at work It's a 450 kW unit. It's a V12 Caterpillar natural gas.
Nice.
And the EPA came down on me and said, you're never allowed to start that again. I said, why? They said, because your company lost the paperwork to it. So because it doesn't fall in there. It's the CFR 40.6, I think, the EPA regulation for emissions.
So are you, hold on, you're American then, eh? I never knew what part of the world you came from, so.
Yeah, I'm down in South Carolina.
Okay. I was going to say, because if you bought it and have it, legally you should be allowed to fire it up. But is that the rule in the States? Like, if you have a motor, the government can be like, hey, you know that thing you own?
Oh, yeah.
You can't use that thing you own anymore?
Well, see, here's the thing. You could use it if we still had the thing from the factory, because it was built by Caterpillar.
Yeah.
And when Caterpillar built it, they made a data plate on it, and they sent you a document with it that says this engine does not meet EPA regulations, and it does not have to because it's over 250 kW and it's a stationary unit.
Yeah.
But because we can't find that document, we're not allowed to ever run it again.
Oh, that's nuts. In Canada, once you own it, there's nothing saying you can't fire it up. All the law says is that the person selling it has to make sure that it's in compliance before they sell it to you. As soon as it's sold to you, you're free to use it. As long as you're not allowed to delete the emissions on it. If it had emissions, that they could get you for that. But there's no law that says that you're like, hey, I can't. The ownership is on the government to prove that you alter the emissions, not on you to prove that it is.
Well, see, down here it goes, you have like state level versus federal level, where like the EPA falls under a federal level. So like this could go on in any of the 50 states. But if you go to like a state level, like personal vehicles, because this generator is owned by a company and it's not a personally owned item. So because it's not personally owned, then they can control it like that. But when you come down to vehicles, you have things like my pickup. In New York State, it would have to be smog tested every year. But down here in South Carolina, there's no smog testing. So I can cut it off at the cat and just be like, yeah, this is how it runs now.
I'm so glad Canada doesn't have smog testing anywhere.
Yeah, that seems pretty ridiculous.
But yeah, that goes by a state by state level.
So what involves a smog test? What do they do? Just hook up to your exhaust pipe and be like, yeah, you're good. You're bad. Get lost.
Yeah. Yeah. And see, the thing with that is there's ways around that too. Like if you, like for my truck, if I was in California, I could put super in my truck and then run it down the highway, like run it hard 5 grand the whole time and get the engine real hot. And if he puts it on the machine right away, it'll pass because it's burning cleaner because of the temperatures that the engine's running at.
Huh. Life hack.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm really glad that Canada just basically says, once you own it, you can do what you want with it.
Yeah. So does Canada really have more freedom than America? What is
this? Yeah. Oh, we see really free like here.
Canada has more freedom than America in basically absolutely everything except for guns.
Listen. Now we're talking.
The most important thing, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I trade it all.
One thing I don't understand is like America, like, sorry, we're getting too political right off the bat. But the one thing I want explained to me is that every American's like, we have guns to protect ourselves from the government so the government doesn't take away our freedoms. Also, we have way less government freedoms than every other developed nation in the world. And it's like, what? You guys are like on the freedom index, like number 18 or something like that. And it's like, what are the guns for? You keep saying that, but you're number 18.
This is a good point.
It's like a proof. Yeah. I get now, it's weird because it varies state by state. Different states have such different laws. It's like
incredible. That is weird. That is weird about that. And I know like with Alberta kind of going a little bit rogue here lately, which I'm supportive of. Don't tell anyone. Anyways, they're going a bit rogue lately. It's like, oh man, even provinces can kind of do their own thing. That's kind of neat. I thought we all like ran together. Where like in the States, you guys can have extremely different rules, and in Canada, I guess we kind of can too. I'm not sure Alberta's doing this. They're just not following federal regulations in certain things.
We can actually have different rules if it's an area that our constitution says is under provincial guidelines. The province. Allowed to make the rule. Where Alberta came into the thing is over this gun control law is that gun control and firearm safety is in such a weird gray area between the two, is that when they made the Constitution, they didn't explicitly say that it was a provincial or a state matter. It said, like, national security. And Trudeau is trying to say that, hey, it's a national security issue to have a bunch of handguns. And the provinces are saying that, like, Alberta's saying, no, that's a provincial issue. Like, it didn't say individual, we're not being attacked by foreigners with guns.
Yeah.
It's more of an issue of local area, so that falls under provincial policing. So it's, I think it's going to be a big debate that ends up in the Supreme Court, and we'll see how it goes, but.
Anyways, it's cool that we can kind of rebel. That's nice. Yeah. To have Manitoba won't, I'm from Manitoba. I doubt you know where that is, Jeff, but we're pretty quiet over here.
Hey, listen, I was born up by the Canadian border, so.
No way, really?
Yeah, where were you born? Yeah, I was up in Burlington, Vermont, actually. It's over by Quebec.
Okay, very cool.
So I'm on that side of things. I know it's not the good part of town, but it's a part of that.
Yeah, too close to Quebec. I have things to say now. No.
Yeah.
They're kind of their own thing. Jeez, they've always been their own thing.
Yeah, that's fair. Quebec is like, I honestly keep forgetting that Quebec. Huh.
They wanted to separate, boy.
But like, they are like so far ahead of the States. And honestly, it's one of those things that impresses me about Quebec is that when they don't like something, they will stand up as a whole province and be like, screw you, we're not following that rule. And I love how Alberta finally took like that bit of a, like the thing that Quebec has been doing that I like for like the last 40 years is like, we don't like that. It doesn't suit our interests. We're not doing it. And suddenly like Alberta does that. And everyone's like, oh my God, how are you doing it? And like Quebec's been doing it so long that we don't even
realize. Yeah. We just forgot that was happening. That's a good point. I'm like, oh yeah, Quebec has been just terrible. Not terrible, but like they do whatever they want. That's awesome. Good for them.
They're doing their own thing.
Like, I don't agree with everything because some of it drives me nuts, but like it's more the federal government with Quebec, not Quebec itself. I don't like how the federal government handles it.
Especially like I know I don't want to get a COVID debate. Someone's going to try to shoot me, but like just with all the different rules, it's like I should be a 4-year area. Like, why did Manitoba have to follow all the same rules that were set down in Toronto and Ottawa and all these massive cities where it's like, geez, like I'm like when one person in COVID in the town had it, or sorry, one person during COVID had it. We all knew because we're from a small town. Like, hey, let's just avoid him for 2 weeks. Like, that's just what it was. We're a small town. It's different.
Well, I think that's the problem with, like, everything with politics that drives people so nuts is that it's not a left and a right divide. Like, the U.S. loves to play up, like, Republicans, Democrats. And what the issue really is rural versus city.
Oh, definitely. I 100% agree with that.
Rural versus city.
Like, rural areas try to keep making policy, or cities keep trying to make policies, and they're like, we need to reduce all this firearm crime. And I'm like, that's not a, and like what Alberta says, like, why are you making a law for one guy that lives out on a farm in Saskatchewan? Why is the same law that is applying to someone in downtown Toronto firearm possession applying to somebody on a farm? Like, we could separate it. You know what I love about England? England has very reasonable gun control laws. Is basically with their firearm control laws, they have different laws for people. If you own a farm, if you own a farm and you're in a rural area, you're allowed way more guns than if you live in downtown London. They look at somebody and like, you live in downtown London in Essex. I don't think you need 14 shotguns. Like, but you live up on a farm up in Scotland. You know what? You probably need a few hunting rifles, a couple shotguns. You go quail hunting. That makes sense. And then they literally take and be like, hey, if you have a note from somebody that owns some land that lets you go shooting, you can get a note and say that, hey, this person's going to be coming shooting on their lawn. You can take that note down to the police station and be like, hey, I've got a note from Farmer Bob that I like to go hunting with them. They're like, oh, great. Glad Farmer Bob said you could grab a gun. They give you a thing like, just pass a little knowledge test on firearm safety and you can go and pick yourself up a gun. That's it. That's it. Mm-hmm. They're just basically like, hey, you got to have a reason to own it in order to own it.
And Jeff can go down to the Kmart and just pick up a few handguns in his grocery basket.
I was going to say, like, so when I lived up in New York, buying them up there, you'd have to buy it. And then they give you the serial number and stuff for it in New York. And you have to go to the New York townhouse and register it to your name with the serial number and everything. And then you could go back and pick it up at the store.
To be honest, that is one thing that I do really love. Like, when it comes to Canada's firearm laws, the handgun ban, I don't really agree with that. But I think it's way easier to buy a gun in Canada than in the U.S. from, like, everyone I've talked to. It seems way easier to buy a gun here.
Now, see, in South Carolina, I can walk into the store, say, how much is that one? They say, oh, it's $200. I can lay down $200 on the counter. They say, here you go, have a good day. And then they just have to walk to the truck with me and just put it in the truck.
So it's by state, too, because, yeah, some places you can get a gun super easily.
With you.
Yeah.
What?
But in South Carolina, so, like, our laws on, like, handguns is anybody can own a handgun as long as you're not, like, you don't have any felonies.
Yeah.
But to carry one, like, town and stuff, you have to have a concealed permit.
Makes sense.
But that is, if you're hunting or fishing, so, like, if you don't have a, you know, like, oh, I'm going to go fishing for down here where I'm at. If you're, like, fishing for the day, we don't care about the concealed weapons permit. Just take it with you. Just, when you're done, just put it back.
That makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, which, we cannot carry handguns in Canada.
Well, I mean, you can, but you just need a reason to carry a handgun. Like, so many Canadians don't know that. It's like, you just need to apply to be able to carry a handgun on your person. It's not a hard application. And
you can, what are you talking about?
I mean, well, like,
you can't carry in Canada.
Yes, you can.
What? No, you can't.
Yeah, there's literally an exemption that you just apply for.
If your job, if you have a job that puts you in danger, so someone who carries money, trappers, like, those guys can carry handguns.
You just need to have a valid reason, and you need, like, one other person to sign off on the fact that, hey, I have a valid reason. Like, if you go, all you need to do is you pay $15, you get your free miner's license from the government, and then you say, hey, I'm going prospecting up in the woods. Or you get a trapper's license and you say, hey, I'm running trap lines, or I'm doing some kind of, like, geological exploration. I'm going to be out in the woods, or I'm a forester, or, you know, I'm doing something out in the bush, or I'm carrying money in a city. I'm doing something that could require the defense of my person. And the government says, yep, that's a valid reason. And then you can carry a handgun around with you. And it's like a $25 application, and everyone's, like, losing their minds. You're like, what about the people that need their guns? And it's like, yeah, it's a $25 form. It's not that hard.
Chase is over here, like, me and all my boys that I work with, Big Oil's after us. We need protection.
Yeah, Big Oil's coming for us. That's a valid point. I got to be careful what we eat, man.
right? I'm feeling like every time I look, a black SUV pulls into the driveway, I'm like, oh, this is it.
Yeah, this is it. Dang it. Well, get the SKS. Might as well go down swinging.
You know, I probably have pissed enough people off. Somebody reached out to me from AIM Highway Maintenance and be like, we want to talk with you.
Oh, about that video about your highway, like your snow clearing video?
Yeah.
Nice. Oh. What'd they say? Oh, can you talk about it?
I don't know. He's just like, oh, they just want to have a phone call and talk about it. He's like, you asked if you can call me tomorrow.
Do they do an unsafe job?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, then tell them that. Who cares?
Well, I don't know whether this is, like, this is a guy that's retired. He left AIM, and he stopped working for him 2 years ago. So I don't know if he's calling me because he's annoyed at what I posted, or if he's got the dirt on it.
Oh, maybe it's the dirt. Maybe
this could be dirt. Juicy.
Yeah, I'll hold. Wait to release this just in case you get assassinated.
I was going to do another video, but I just haven't had the damn time. But basically, I went and looked it up because some people are like, how do you know that AIM is doing a worse job? I Googled it. There are about 26 reports in the last year that the government has filed against them.
Oh, shit.
Of non-compliance. That, like, 24 to 26, I don't remember the exact number. But it was that many reports in 1 year over a four-month span that said that the government has found them not to be removing the snow to the standards. Like, so in a, like, the course of a winter, not plowing the snow for 26 days is pretty goddamn ridiculous. Like, that's an entire month of not plowing snow. And, like, after an entire month of not plowing snow, they're like, oh yeah, that's expensive to do.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
What is this, June?
Yeah, exactly. It takes the summer off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. Why is a company in Spain at all allowed to plow the snow in Canada? And that, like, some of the people are like, yes, but it's owned by, like, a lot of the comments are like, but the drivers and all the operators are Canadian and they know how to plow snow. And I'm like, it doesn't matter how well somebody knows how to plow snow. You could have the best snow plow operator in the world, hands down, an entire team of 30 of them. But if you turn around and be like, hey, just so you know, guys, here's $50 to clear the whole highway. That's got to cover fuel, maintenance, everything. They ain't going to be able to do shit.
Yeah, or you could have the best operators in the world, and they're like, hey, you know, that wasn't much of a snowfall. We're not going out. And the operator's like, hey, there's 5 inches out there. We should probably go. It's enough to go out, which for you guys, you get way more than that, but say just a sprinkling to you. And then the company says, no, well, hey, best operators in the world, if they're not going out, that doesn't make a difference.
Well, one of the big issues is like laying down sand and materials. It's not even like going out. It's like a load of salt is about $2,000 to $3,000 per load. And it might be that you need to lay out 20 loads of salt in order to clean that highway up to get it to a very safe condition again. And then the company says, well, let's only put 10 loads of salt out tonight. That's $40,000 in their pocket. But yet the highway didn't have as good job. And they're like, well, what do you mean? We've got trucks out running, putting down salt. And it's like, you're not putting enough. You're trying to skim a little bit off of that top every now and like, you know, you don't, it kind of requires 10 loads of salt. You only do 8 instead of 10 every single day. And you keep adding that up over the course of the month. Where do you think it's going?
So I will add this to that. So when I grew up in upstate New York, I was probably 120 miles south of Quebec. And then we were across the state from Buffalo. So we always had all that lake effect snow. So like I grew up like driving in snow. Like I always learned it my whole life and stuff.
Damn near Canadian.
But yeah. So then I joined the Marine Corps. I went and did my Marine Corps time. And then my last duty station was here in South Carolina. The year that I got out that January, or I think it was December. It was either December or January. It snowed that year. The first time it snowed here in 200 years, they shut the city down.
You guys can't handle it.
Like I walked outside and I could see the grass poking up through what had snowed. Like yeah, there's still green grass poking up through. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, this is their big snowfall. I live near
Vancouver and that 100% happens in Vancouver and we're in Canada. So,
oh, they're babies in Vancouver.
Oh, that's my God. Ridiculous. Half an inch of snow and they're like, the whole city is shut down. Snow days. Nobody come to work. We've got half an inch of snow.
Oh, yeah. Government buildings were shut down. Stores were shut down. You couldn't go to the grocery store. It was a state of emergency. You could not get in your vehicle and drive. Oh, that's ridiculous. Like, yeah, it was.
Yeah. Come to Manitoba, it's minus 50 and there's 2 feet of snow on the road.
But me and my brother-in-law, he's from Ohio. I had a 2003 Duramax at the time, four-wheel drive. And all we had was a tow rope and some like skim boards for like body surfing out in the ocean.
Oh, yeah. I see where this is going.
So I'm like, well, we got a truck. We don't have any hills here. We got a rope and we got some boogie boards. Like,
let's go.
Yeah. We're going to do some hood rat stuff.
Hood rat. Oh, no. No, that sounds pretty fun. Nobody got hurt? Or is this a viral video I've seen of somebody getting hurt?
No. It was my pre-TikTok days.
Oh, okay. So, I have seen a video like that. And the guy just smokes the side of a house. And it's like, nice.
Have you seen the video like that where they're going around a corner and the guy gets smoked by an on? Like, they go around the corner, the sled swings out to the outside, and an oncoming car just smokes the guy?
I have not. Is he dead?
I don't know.
That doesn't sound great, but interesting.
Well, see, we did this and it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Like, we've been drinking off work, so we're like, oh, let's just cruise around the neighborhood, like keep it low and slow and stuff. And then all of a sudden we do it and all the neighbors are walking out like throwing their arms up in disgust at us. So we did like 2 or 3 laps.
Yeah.
We
don't, you know, this is an emergency.
Yeah, so we pull back in the driveway and we're standing there. All of a sudden we see this with like somebody sitting in the trunk holding the rope.
You inspired somebody.
I'm like, yes. I'm nice. So glad.
I mean, it's fun. It's
hell a, yeah.
A good way to get hurt, but fun.
Ugh. I mean, the best. You know, I'm tired of people saying it. We're like, you could get hurt doing that. You can get hurt doing a lot of things. Fuck it.
I know. You're anyway, just more prone.
Our generation. We've been on here for like a half an hour. It's a subject that I love talking about, and we're talking about sledding.
Hey, that's important too.
It is. I love it. But
power generation, let me tell you.
Power generation, yeah. About that power generation.
Go into it, Jeff. Come on. I'm waiting.
We're just gonna put the spot here. Tell us everything about it. Just sum up the entire industry in the next like 30 seconds if you could.
25 if possible.
Stay far away from things like Generac. But no.
Oh my god, yes. My god. I had a heavy snowfall, lost a little bit of the solar power from the shop, bought a Generac little generator. Man, that thing is a piece of shit.
What is a Generac? Oh, it's just a little generator?
Oh, it's like the worst brand of generators. Like, they just make generators, and I'm sorry, but this thing sucks dick. I would never in my life ever recommend buying a Generac.
So once you get into, like, their bigger models, like their 10 kW all the way up to their 300 kW, they take the engine, they set the engine in the unit, and then they said, okay, well, now it needs a radiator. So they sent the radiator right in front of the engine. And then they said, okay, well, we didn't put a fan in, so let's put the fan in front of the radiator. So you have a pulley that comes down off your drive shaft and then goes through. There's a bearing inside your radiator that goes through your radiator to your fan.
What?
That sounds very confusing.
Then they're like, well, we haven't put an exhaust on it yet, so let's just put that in front of the fan.
What?
I had one where the mounts.
You know, I made some comments about some videos about mechanics being able to design shit a lot better than a lot of engineers.
Yeah.
I feel like this is exactly one of those things where there is no way that a diesel mechanic is going to be like, well, let's design it this way and put this generator like... 100%, if a diesel mechanic was building it, they would have already, the radiator wouldn't have been an afterthought.
Oh, no, it was definitely an afterthought on that. But so then in front of the fan, they put the exhaust. So the one I had, it was a 300 kW. The mounts for the exhaust broke from vibration in the fan. And when they broke, the exhaust dropped down into the fan, pushed the fan back into the radiator. And then it slammed the exhaust forward. It pulled the exhaust off the exhaust side of the turbo and then caught the inside of the sound dampening insulation inside, caught it all on fire. The unit burned to the ground.
Oh, my goodness.
Great design. Like,
but even if the design worked and it didn't break in a magical world where nothing breaks, what would the efficiency loss of this system is insane. Like, a radiator exists to cool parts. The fan is to take air, force it through the radiator to cool the coolant. What the hell is the muffler is a big heat dissipator. Really, at the end of the day, it's dissipating a ton of heat. So if you put the fan behind that, you're just going to be sucking the hot air off of the muffler into the radiator, which is then going to not cool the radiator to not give you the proper coolant. Like, Jesus Christ, a third grader could design a better goddamn engine than that. I'm pretty sure in third grade, I drew an engine. And in no way, when I ever drew a truck at the age of 10, did I put the radiators behind the mufflers with a fan. Like, fuck.
Yeah, it's brutal to look at, but all their stuff's that way. And now they switched to Iveco engines. I think it's Iveco. It's called. It's some European main. Yeah,
they make the worst truck. Though this is another rant. I don't know why you're getting me so worked up. It's been a bit of a stressful day. But Iveco, so a little background on it. We're going to go into it in like 2 minutes on the Iveco ones. But Iveco is like the shitty international of Europe. They suck.
Well, oh, yeah.
Like all the truck drivers that I've talked to have said that it's the worst one. It's the one that they least want. And then you look at Nikola Motors. You know the scam with Nikola Motors. They tried to build an electric hybrid truck and they ended up just rolling it down a hill with the brakes released. They're like, oh, we now made an electric truck. We actually made a truck this time, guys. Look at us. And I looked at the truck and it's literally an Iveco body. Everything on it is an Iveco except for the grill. And then I made a TikTok even calling that one out. And I'm like, literally, you guys are scamming people again. That is an Iveco truck. All you did was put your drivetrain in it. That is no different than what we did in Carl. We spent $300,000 to build Carl, and all of a sudden now it's other billions of dollars. You put what we did to the Kenworths, you did to an Iveco, which doesn't even make sense because you're a North American truck manufacturing, putting the driveline in the shittiest possible truck you could find. In other words, the cheapest possible truck, now trying to sell it as your own. That's full of shit. And then they came back and they're like, we partnered with Iveco. And I'm like, fuck.
Like, oh, you did.
You guys are a scam and you're still being a scam. You didn't make a truck.
Yeah, you stole a truck.
Yeah. Tell us how you really feel, Chase.
Sorry, it's just being in the space, it makes me so angry when these companies come out and they do this shit. And then they're like, oh, they're just full-on scam companies. And it makes it so much harder because, like, you know, somebody's in the market. They're shopping around for trucks. They're doing the research. And you're like, these EVs never work. Look how they're a scam. And you're like, it just makes it harder for us to sell the EVs. Ours works. We have videos of ours just driving. But they're like, oh, well, how is that real? They faked it. How did you guys manage to do it? And, like, it's such a hard argument. And then when they're like, well, these guys couldn't do it with $30 billion company valuation. Yeah. They were not able to make an electric truck, or they had to go to somebody else to make the truck and the body with their billions of dollars. I'm like, because they were a scam and they're still scamming. Yeah. All we need to do to not do that is not scam people. But now you make it real hard for people to discern what is a scam and what isn't. And it just makes me so angry because now I have to deal with some other shitty company's thing.
Well, see, y'all got the Caterpillar in yours, right?
That's right.
So I had I'll bring this up because I feel like this is something y'all are missing out on what you're trying to push here. I had a Caterpillar generator. It was a C4.4. It was an inline four cylinder.
Well, that's a good motor.
Yeah, great motor. That's why I'm bringing it up. But
I've used that on a few projects now. It's my go-to for smaller projects.
So what had happened was there was a building, and it controlled the radar for aircraft, for like planes.
Well, that's pretty important.
So underground power went out, and then the generator fired up automatically. So the generator fires, starts running, and it starts powering the radar. I'm like, all right, well, it's got 500 gallons of fuel in the tank. Like, let her run. Like, let the girl eat.
Let her eat. Yep.
So the contractors come in. They said, hey, listen, the cable we need for this job is back ordered. We'll see when we can get it. We'll do some searching, yada, yada, yada. 13 months later.
Holy Dinah.
They show up with the cable. Mind you, this thing is still plugging away.
Oh, yeah. They are bulletproof.
Oh, yeah. So every 2 weeks, there was a battery backup system on that building. So it would last about 30 minutes. So every 2 weeks, I'd go in, I'd shut it off, throw the oil filter off, open the oil drain, throw the fuel filter off, throw a new fuel filter on, throw a new oil filter on, fill it back up with 2 gallons of oil, hit start, back on. We ran 13 months like that.
That is crazy.
I've got a community up in northern BC that we went and installed one of these, and they're going on like 3 years now. But the entire town, this one little like C4 generator is running an entire town now for like 3 years as just their go-to, like, oh, that's all we run. It's not connected to the North American grid. They just run this little C4 and we put in a big battery bank and some solar, and that's just, it just chugs along.
And see, I think that's what y'all are missing with the market when you're trying to do Carl there is when you put that generator in there, you're not subjecting it to spikes and drops in the load like you would a conventional engine. It's going to run at 1800 RPMs. That's what it needs. Well, are y'all 50 hertz up there?
60.
You're 60 hertz. So yeah, it's 1800 RPMs. So yeah, matter what you do, this thing's going to run 1800 RPMs. There's no spikes, drops. You're not dropping the pedal, and this thing's not ramping up and spin, like trying to spin itself to death, trying to catch up.
Well, that's exactly what we are doing.
That's what I'm saying.
A generator, but the C4 does not meet the power requirements of the truck.
Right, but any generator. So your longevity of your engine is going to last tenfold compared to any conventional diesel truck that's just it's controlling the drive line, so you're subjecting it to the ups and downs of normal driving conditions.
Yeah, well, you know how in a truck, a normal truck, your diesel motor gets about 20,000 hours before you're looking at a rebuild.
Right.
Caterpillar has a motor running right now, steady. It has 150,000 hours with no rebuild on a cat. One motor going on 150,000 hours compared to 20,000.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
it's a 3406E, but it's sitting up way up near like the Arctic on an isolated island in the middle of nowhere on the Arctic. Like, it's, you're talking, that is a massive headache just to get to this thing. It's running some kind of research facility. It used to be like distant early warning line back in the 70s, 80s when we were worried about Soviet missiles. It's still up there chugging away. And it's one of those ones where it's so expensive to go up there that they're looking at it and be like, well, we'll replace it when it fucks up. We're not going up there to do any kind of like servicing or maintenance until this, like, until we
ask. We did an oil change 10,000 hours ago, guys. Yeah. Listen,
Well, no, that's the thing. Like, it has extended life, like oil filters, so you can go like 10,000 hours or something insane like that on the oil changes. You know, you hook it up to like a massive oil drum, the thing just sits there and eats all day. It's like 100,000 hours. You're like, we'll replace it when it dies. Somebody's still maintaining that thing.
No, that thing just is going to survive. Like, that thing's going to outlive us.
Probably.
But, like, that is literally the efficiency of a generator. So, like, in this truck, this motor should outlive everything else in the truck. Like, you're not going to be dropping liners.
Right, and that's the thing. You know, that's what they're built for, too, is, you know, you think about it, especially if you're running an inline engine, what kind of forces are you putting on that crank with an inline generator? I do this all day. You get to that point, it gets to 1800, it's like, okay, this is where we're gonna stay till you shut me off.
Yep.
So I'd be interested to see
it doesn't even need to like rev up. I believe it starts at 1800 RPM. Like, the starter spins the motor at 1800. It's at 8 fires.
Yeah. Yeah. So some of my bigger units are actually 48 volt systems with like two starters on them to get them to that 1800 RPM. So it picks up and it just goes.
Well, we're able to start our motor off of the generator on the back end of the motor.
Really?
Yeah, the generator on the back end of the motor actually works as the starter. So it'll crank it, fire itself. So you have a full like 350 kW of starting power. Like, yeah, I've got 600 amps is starting.
So my question would be, is in the future, would y'all ever think about looking at the new Cummins engine?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't not consider it, but we've got a pretty good partner.
Like, are you talking about the hydrogen engines?
No, I'm talking about the 3-cylinder, 6-piston.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Is it what?
It's a 3-cylinder, so it's got 3 cylinders, but it has 6 pistons. They're opposing pistons.
Look, it's a Cummins boxer engine?
Yeah.
Kind of, not really. So it doesn't have a valve train. There's no valve train on this engine whatsoever.
It's a Cummins rotary engine?
I'm so confused.
So you got 3 cylinders, right? You have 2 pistons and your fuel injector is in the, so like, you take 1 cylinder, you have a piston on the top that's coming down and a piston on the bottom that's coming up, and they're going to meet in the middle. Your fuel injector, your injector is in the middle, and it's going to inject in the middle of those. They're going to go up, they're going to come back down. That's going to be your compression stroke. Going to compress, combust, and then they're going to go back up. And at the bottom of the cylinders where the pistons pass, there's ports in it for your exhaust. So there's no valve train on this engine whatsoever, but it has 6 pistons and 3 cylinders.
That's wacky. I'm very confused, but I'm confused, but I pick it up when you're putting down a little bit.
It's incredible.
I'm doing it right now.
They made them for the new military tactical vehicles, the MRAPs and stuff.
Huh.
Is what it was designed for, but they're...
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't.
I love that. Chase does not lie to you. He will tell the truth.
See, my thing with them is don't let your timing be off because pistons will kiss.
That's where I was literally thinking is that, yep, that. And number two, you're not gonna get the proper lubrication that you like. How are you going to be like if you blow an O-ring or an O-ring gets a little bit weak? All your oil is gonna flow directly down from your top pistons into the bottom one, or
Yeah.
I guess you lay it sideways so it works like a boxer. You would have to lay it sideways so it works as a boxer, but then
So
how are you
in the
getting the?
military vehicles are vertical right now.
Oh, see that? Yeah, okay, that's how I thought it looked like, and then I thought, no, that must be wrong. You wouldn't do. How do you lubricate the top set if it's firing down? If you had any kind of O-ring on your piston that's worn out, the oil's gonna form on the top. It's gonna go down in there into the combustion chamber. Now you want to mean it make tier four emissions, but she's pure burning pure oil because let's face it, O-rings go. Normally the oil's just going back down. This oil all on the top is going to drain like a motherfucker into the combustion chamber. You're gonna be going through 4 liters of oil per day as you're blowing nothing but blue smoke. And your tier four emission system is having a fit like an
I
autistic
have a
kid.
solution. I have a solution. They just call it a Detroit, and then it wouldn't matter anyways. Burns the same amount of oil.
Speaking of Detroit,
Come on, I thought that
glad you brought Detroit up.
Okay.
So I actually just acquired a Detroit engine.
Ooh, what is it?
It's a 671. So it's not the 6V, it's an inline 671 series.
Nice.
So it's the two stroke,
Yeah, it's old Screaming Jimmy.
but it's out of a generator.
Nice.
So it's got the supercharger and the supercharger that feeds the turbo is what it has.
Okay.
My thought is I'm about to take this thing, slap some frame rails on it, and put a cab on the back and call it a rat rod.
Okay, pardon. So you have an engine. And frame rails and a cab. Okay, you know what? Pretty much that's a rad rod. I like it. Go for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's
all the Edison truck is, so let's take her easy here.
Yeah, that's true. Tread lightly. We have electric drives, okay? It's a little different.
Well, you know.
Do we have an electric rat rod, Jordan?
I thought about making this one
We're not
electric, I'm
that
not gonna
ratty.
lie.
If we would have shot the door like we were talking about doing and like shot the window, like you know how you're talking about shooting the window chase way back when?
I still want to do that video.
If we did shit like that to it, then maybe it would be a rad rod. Like rough it up a bit. It's pretty clean for an old girl, so it's not really ratty.
Yeah, see, no, I'm talking like a 50s cab, like a 50s Chevy cab on it.
Rusty. Rusty.
Yeah.
Okay, hey, speaking of old trucks. Okay, I got a story for you guys. I'm very mad. Jordan's upset. I
Your
was
turn to have a rant. I went on mine.
Yeah, it's just I was trying to buy a truck this week. I've actually been trying to buy it for 2 weeks, trying to line up with the guy. It's a 1967 F-250, just a gasser. It's got the 352 in it, and no one be like, "Oh, they have 351s." No, the older ones they had a 352. Okay, everyone following?
Sure.
Tracking. It's a nice blue old truck, beautiful blue. I was like, "Oh, I'm gonna get that cleaned up. I'm gonna like make it a little not a work truck, but I'm gonna make it look like a work truck. I want to get my logo on the door, but like." Hand printed like it would be in the late 60s. Like I was so excited. So this guy pulls it out for me. We make a deal. We settle on a price. He pulls it out for me. Gets it ready to go. Pulls it into his yard because it was away in a snowbank. Gets it pulled up. Because it was pulled up, someone was driving by, saw it, drove in, gave him the cash for it, and he sold it on me. I just got a text from this guy, and he's like, "Yeah, oh no, I'm mad. I'm so mad." I get a text from the guy.
Oh.
Hey, sorry, just sold it on you. Guy gave me asking prices. Like, you didn't even give me the option. Yeah, we agreed on a price, but I would have gave you more. We had a deal, man. Like, the only reason that dude saw it is because you pulled it up for me because I was picking it up the next day.
This just went from blue collar interviews to blue collar therapy.
Oh, I'm mad. I was so mad. Like, I was at work. And I was like, I had told everyone at work, like, hey, I'm going to pick this up Friday. I'm showing people pictures. Like, hey, you know, get in my trailer and going so excited. Get a text message. Yeah, just sold on you. Sorry. Like, you mofo. I was very polite to him because I didn't know what to do. I was so mad, I was polite. That's how mad I was. Like mildly mad, Jordan would have swore at him and yelled at him, but so mad. I was like, I don't know what to do. I'm gonna have to be polite. I might go there and oh, I don't even know what I'd do. Sorry, that was my rant, but
Dang.
I was that hurt. That was a that was a stab. I was pissed off about that.
To be fair, at least in the prairies, you guys have such a good, like, that's the one thing I'm jealous about. You guys have such a good option to buy classic trucks for, like, next to nothing, and it drives me nuts.
This is true. There's other ones to buy. But I had my mind on this one for so long. That's what hurt me. Oh.
You should see the stuff we got down here. Oh, my goodness.
Good or bad?
Oh, we don't even have snow. We don't have snow. We don't have to salt the roads.
Oh, that's true.
It's pristine.
Yeah. No, everything I buy, like this one, it was actually in pretty good shape. But, yeah, it does need a little rust repair. But now I got to find something else.
I'm sure you will.
Yeah. Speaking of rust repair and salt, my truck is a 2013 and its fenders are just rusted out. Like, they're not that bad yet, but the paint's all flaked off and starting to rust bad.
That's because you have a Ford. My Ford is.
You have the same truck.
That's why I know what you're talking about, because all the fenders are fucking rusted off.
Like, trying to make it, you have a Ford. We drive the same vehicle.
That's how I know. That's why I'm against the Ford rusting out.
Okay,
Steve, down here, I got a 2012 Ram.
Mm-hmm. Clean.
I still got wax on the inside of my frame rails from the factory.
Yeah, see, we do not have that. Your frame after a couple months, like, we have a brand new truck at the place I'm working at right now. It's like you already see rust kind of starting on the frame, and it's like how it's so new.
Like, I've started to get like surface rust on my drive shaft just recently, to where it's like speckled.
Yeah, no, that's it's immediate here, but it is it is.
I'm rocking 10 years and 153,000 miles. I'm like, oh, well, surface rust on the drive shaft.
Lucky guy. No accidents, though?
No, it's been doing good.
Oh, dang, she's stock. Oh, a guy, we're a small town here. The guy who pumps the gas at the co-op here in town. He just got a new truck, and I always ask, "Oh, how's your new truck doing?" Like, he just got his brand new 2022. Asked him about it the other day. Just, "Hey, how's your truck doing, bud?" He just looked at me. He's like, "You didn't hear?" I'm like, "No." I walk over it. The side of that cab is folded in. The guy shouldn't even be driving around work. Someone spun out on the highway and ran right into him.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that sucked.
Oh, man, I just Googled old trucks for sale in the prairies coming up at the Ritchie Brothers auction.
Cheap.
Are you coming out this way by any chance anytime soon?
Probably not, but where? Whereabouts?
All the way between Ritchie Brothers, between Saskatchewan and BC, they have like 70 old trucks from the 1960s and 70s coming up. And like, they always go so cheap because they're always at like... They're like one truck at like a farm auction where, like, you know, they're just selling off the whole farm. The
owners have passed away. What did you search to find this?
The way to search them is go to Ritchie Brothers and then you just enter the word truck.
Like the app? Hmm? Like the Ritchie app?
Oh, not the computer.
Also, Chase, if you're wondering why I haven't said anything about the background noise, as I found out that is Jeff's daughter, so I'm not going to be yelling about background noise.
We're doing daddy-daughter night in the garage. It's our thing. It's our Friday night thing.
Mm-hmm.
She likes to work on things.
What's she working on right now?
So the other day we rebuilt a chainsaw, and that was her first.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Oh, how old is she?
She's three right now.
Did she do the chainsaw or did you help her with the chainsaw?
Well, I mean, I explained it to her. I did it with my son too. We ended up meeting some guy at a gas station. He had a zero turn lawnmower that had blown up. And I got out of my truck and I had my tools were in the front seat and stuff. He said, "Hey, you work on stuff?" I said, "Yeah, man, I work on stuff." He said, "I got this lawnmower that's blown up. I'll give you $400 to swap the engine. I'll drop the engine off tomorrow." I said, "That's fine with me." So I had my son, he was five at the time. He came out in the garage and we did the whole thing together. I said, "You know, this is a cylinder. This is your push rod. This is your crank. This is your spark plugs. This is," and I try to go through every step with him. And
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Huh. It's kind of the future that I'm shooting for.
That's a good way for them to learn. Like, even just the small stuff. It's amazing when people don't know like anything about motors and you're having a casual conversation. Like, you don't expect them to be able to rebuild anything, but you even talk about changing oil or checking it. They're like, "Yeah, like, I don't even know what that would entail."
Oh, well, my goodness. That's my thing. Like, in the 70s, you used to buy a new car and the manual came with like, oh, this is how you adjust your valves. You buy a new car now, it's like, oh, don't drink the stuff inside the battery.
That's literally true, though.
You know?
Oh, I'm working on the Edison owner's manual right now, and I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm building this owner's manual like an old classic car. It has all the maintenance in it. If you decide to lick the car, you're on your own.
Yeah, that's your fault.
Yes, but the thing is, for liability sakes, don't we have to start putting this stuff in here?
I'm gonna assume that our customers aren't stupid.
I'm not assuming that, but liability, legal liability. Someone could do that. Hey, they didn't, guess what? Edison didn't put this in the owner's manual. We can drink it and make a bunch of money off them. I think we have to.
Well, you
I
know
think
it says it on top of the battery too, though.
like how much time do you think I have to write an owner's manual? Like I
I'm
feel
not
like
saying you have to, but hey, company lawyers, hey, guys, take the most standard liability package so we can protect ourselves from people who want to screw us over.
I mean, yeah, obviously we're going to have to, but right now my time is only so much. I need an owner's manual that when I give these next five trucks out, that they at least have like a general manual that they can flip through on like service manual.
Yeah.
No, I need
Something to
like
put in the glove box.
liability manual. You know what I'm
Yeah.
gonna do? I'm gonna put in one owner's manual that has all the information you actually need on the truck, and then how about we do this? Then I'll write a separate liability manual called the Edison's liability owner's manual for dumbasses.
I see, I'm all for that. I'm all for that as long as there's legal written liability to save our ass.
Yeah, the Edison owner's manual for liability for dumbasses.
The
Something.
owner manual for dummies. I like that.
You know, the dummy's owner's manual.
Yeah.
Hey, don't stick your penis into the high voltage line.
Dang, good to know. See, but as long as it's there, no one can do it and get mad at us.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's got to be two lines, though. It's got to be two lines.
Of somebody literally doing that. Like a guy, like I watched it out of morbid curiosity, but he wrapped a bunch of like tin foil around his dick with made two little prongs out of it and then stuck his penis into a household outlet.
Where do you search this?
I didn't search it. Somebody sent it to me.
Oh, okay, that's fair. You never know what you're gonna open up.
Got some buddies. And like the problem is
Why?
like, you see just the little like the thing and like you see an outlet and a prong like in a tin foil thing with two things and then like the video zooms out and you're like, what is that, a penis? Why would somebody like somebody's gonna stick tin foil in this outlet? And you watch and you're like, oh, okay, what's homemade outlet plug is somebody done? You're like, wait, is that no? And then you think for a second, you're like, no, surely that's not. Oh my God, that is. Well, surely he's not going to do it. And then he does, and his penis explodes. And you're like, why would you do that? Why would you do that? And then why would you send that to me?
right, so
Fair.
I got your liability manual.
Mm.
It's gonna be three lines. That's it. Just one piece of paper, three lines.
Okay.
Don't put your fingers anywhere you wouldn't put your penis.
That's a fair one.
Don't drink anything that comes out of the truck.
Yeah.
Don't put your
Typically.
penis anywhere you wouldn't put your fingers.
But I literally just saw a video of somebody. I wouldn't put my fingers in there, but someone literally did this. So somebody would.
Yeah, but that's why the first one counteracts that. You wouldn't put your penis in there, but you also wouldn't put your fingers in there, so just don't put either in there.
That's a good point. That's a good point. You know, the funny one is like, don't. Sorry, just talking about work and crush injuries now. I was going to go on a different tangent. I'm just going to mess things up. You guys go back to talking about penises.
I mean, oh no, hold on. Then somebody will sue us for not being gender inclusive.
Oh, that's a good point.
Stick your penis in somewhere you wouldn't stick your finger. Like, what? How do you write that?
If you're sticking anything else in there, I'm gonna be concerned with what's going on.
Okay, we're off on such a weird tangent. Hey, Jeff, do you work on smaller generators too?
Yeah, once in a while. I mean, I go all the way down. I actually got the one back in the back of my truck right now that I found in a dumpster.
What? That's a pretty
Yeah.
good find.
It's a 3.5 kW Kohler from like the 70s that somebody threw away.
Okay, I was gonna
And
ask you as a camping smaller guy, like I like to go camping. I have a smaller contractor, so I have generators on site, lots of different things. What is your recommended smaller generator, the go-to?
if you're talking like one, are you going to keep it in your truck or like one that you can actually move around and be portable with?
Like the one you could throw in the truck for the camping, the one you could throw in the truck for tool, like something small, something you could manhandle.
Hondas are decent.
Those little Hondas?
Yeah, they, I mean, they're running Briggs and Stratton engines on them. So, I mean, really, none of it's made by Honda except for the sticker that says Honda.
Really?
Oh, yeah, no.
Honda has, don't they have lots of small engines? Why wouldn't they run their own?
They do, but most of them are now are Briggs and Stratton. And then all the, anything Honda and anything, I'm trying to think of the other brand, but there's like a couple brands of the smaller ones. No, like there's no generator manufacturer that actually makes their own stator and windings. They're all made by Magnum. Starts with an M.
Magnum makes generators, but they make big generators too.
Right, but anytime that you buy like a, if you buy a Honda, like if you go through it and actually look at the data tags on everything, just your rotor and stator, like what your engine's connected to, is going to say probably Magnum on it, I would bet.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought a Honda would be more independent with that smaller stuff.
No, I mean, they're making them anyway for theirs, so why not mark them up a little bit, sell them to Honda, and then, you know, Honda mark them up a little bit and sell them to you.
Yeah, I love the, like, standard generator you see everywhere. Like, it's the exact same little setup, and it's you'll see it in, like, Mastercraft, you'll see it in Kohler, you'll see it in, oh, what's the other big one? Like, it's just, like, in any brand name, you can tell it's the exact same generator from China.
Yeah, I mean, there's only a couple people that actually make the actual rotor and stator for it.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I've been having trouble lately with troubleshooting is I got a couple units lately that have had bad exciters.
Oh, I am just dealing with that problem on a welder right now.
Yeah, so with the exciters, what I found with those is when it gets into the exciters, you want to check your diodes. There's a diode rectifier in between the stator and your windings. And that's usually what goes bad in there is those diodes.
Huh.
Okay, because, yeah, I'm in the middle of an extremely important project I got to finish next week, and my generator's running fine. It's wound right up. I have 110 output, but I do not have – I've only got 4 volts on my stinger. It just makes a little sparkle.
Huh. So
what, I tried to flash it, like, you know, grab a 24-volt battery and try to flash it. And, like, I lost my 110 output, and I lost the stinger at the same time. So I flashed it, grabbed a 24-volt battery, stuck it to it, and that brought my 110 back. But I still can't get my stinger back.
So what I would do with that is probably ohm out your windings. So you're going to have to figure if you're like a delta or a Y configuration, figure out which wires go to which windings, ohm between them. They should all be within like 5 ohms of each other. And then if that doesn't, if all that checks out all right, then you're going to want to go to your voltage regulator. Your voltage regulator, you're going to have a bunch of wires on, but one's going to be labeled F positive, one's F negative, and then there's going to be a 3 and a 4. And you're going to want to ohm F positive to F negative and then 3 to 4. And those are also supposed to be within 5 ohms of each other. And if those don't read within 5 ohms of each other, it's either your rectifier through your diodes or it's your exciter.
Okay.
Chase, is this that like super old welder you have?
That's not super old. It's like a 2012.
Oh, okay. Didn't you have like a really, really old ass welder?
No, they just haven't changed their style since the 60s.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, maybe it's time Edison just buys a new welder anyway, regardless of if you can fix it.
You know, it was. I was going to do that at, like, the next Ritchie Brothers auction because, like, turns out diesel welders are really expensive. Like, this welder, I bought it, like, 4 years ago now. And, I mean, it was only 5 years old at the time, had, like, 1,000 hours on it. I got it for $500.
What? You're BSing me. You did not.
No, there was an auction in Grand Prairie, and I mean, it was back when the oil patch was a little bit slower, and a massive, like, welding company went out of business that did, like, portable welding, and they had, like, 50 welders all at the time, and there were so many welders that they...
Yeah, I guess how many guys are buying welders, even if they're cheap?
I mean, I was looking at that, and I'm like, I should have bought, like, 3 of these things if I had known.
So another thing you want to look at, too, is GovPlanet.
Oh, that one's good.
GovPlanet, yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I've been scrolling through the old trucks here. There's like 100 old trucks coming up for sale, and I shouldn't buy one. But
tell me what you're talking about. I just searched trucks on the Ritchie Bros app, and I could not find that any old one.
Okay, so what you do is you go to trucks. You're on the app, and then you see that filter on the top top right-hand side?
Mm-hmm. trucks. Top right filter.
Yeah.
You can set years.
You go down, set the year, slide that to like 1979.
Are you sure this is in Canada?
Well, I mean, you can sort by it, but like when you do it, I'm getting a few US things, but 99% of all these old vehicles are in Canada. 100%.
Okay, a few green trucks. Sorry, everyone who's listening. Also, I got to run right away, so I'm going to wrap this up here soon. Jeff, what is your dream generator?
Oh, my dream generator.
Come on. Your generator guy.
I got two at work. I've got a 12-cylinder natural gas. It's actually a heat plant, so it's a geothermal line. There's a heat exchanger in it. It distributes heat to like hospitals and stuff. That one's pretty great. And then I've got a 1.25 megawatt Cummins. And that one, 50.3 liter twin turbo diesel V16. Let me tell you.
Beefy.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is the dumbest thing you've ever been called for like any kind of job? Like, what's the job you've ever done?
Probably an e-stop.
What's an e? Oh, somebody hit the emergency stop and then wondered why they couldn't get it going.
Yeah, that's a pretty common one that I see.
That's a pretty rough one.
Yeah, it's always the first thing you check. Don't start. Yeah, check the e-stop.
Yeah, no, that's on them.
I feel like that's right around the equivalent of like the tech guys being like, "Is it plugged in?" And they're like,
"Yeah,
it's plugged in." Like the first thing is like, "Did you turn the key off or hit the emergency off?"
I mean, yeah, it's right up there with those.
Did you dream job if you're not already doing it? Even if you're already doing it, what's your dream job?
Exact same thing I'm doing now, but working for myself.
Okay, very cool. So, like, just like a subcontracted generator repair company.
Yeah, I mean, there's not many around here. It's a pretty open market.
You know, there's not many around anywhere, and I feel like if anybody's looking for a trade to get into, generator repair is a really, really great one to get into. If you're looking into, like, the heavy-duty mechanics trades, everybody thinks of the heavy equipment, like the bulldozers, all the trucks, the crane, but generator repair, you're normally always inside like a nice building. You're out of the elements. It's not caked in mud. It's not out sitting in the mud at 40 below out in the middle of nowhere. Like, and they're in super high demand because it requires like electrical and mechanical knowledge. So it's like,
you got to know when your ground goes from green to black and black to green.
Yep, and as we're getting into as we're getting into more and more like electrification in the new world, generators are going to become like more and more. So it's one of those trades that's only going to skyrocket in demand, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. That's true. There'll be if the Edison truck starts to if we start to produce quite a few, there's going to need to be more mechanics for that. Actually, no, wait, we're running CAT, so we don't need mechanics.
I mean, we still X. They're still generators.
I was trying to pump up the CAT, man. Come on.
And electricians.
Always oil changes every 10,000 hours, Jordan.
Yeah, just the oil changes. That's all we need. Yeah. Well, that engine's lasting for a lifetime. Cool. Okay, I got to run, boys. Thanks for coming on, Jeff. Anything else you want to ask him, Chase?
No, that's it. Thank you so much for coming on.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime, man. Yeah, hey, anytime you all want to do this again, I got plenty more stuff we can talk about. I got the manual impact wrench. I don't know if y'all seen that floating around those videos.
Oh yeah, I have seen that.
To bring that up, and I totally forgot about it. Can we have like
five? Yeah. Quick chat about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm the manual impact wrench guy.
So wait, where'd you get this thing?
So I've got one that I had at work, and it's actually from the '60s. And I started making videos about that one, and this company got a hold of me, Powerhawk Technologies, and like, hey, we want to send you some stuff. So they ended up sending me the 1-inch drive Snap-on one, because Snap-on bought them out. They're just their subsidiary now.
Yeah. What kind of foot pounds can that thing do?
So it's got four settings on it.
I want to hear the big boy setting.
Setting one is the lowest. That starts at 800 foot pounds.
Okay.
Setting four is the highest one. It's 2,000. And we're not we're not talking nut busting. We're just talking 2,000 realistic foot. It's a spring. I mean, you're talking realistic 2,000 foot pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, being a like a ratchet, can you get 2,000 pounds and then put like a 10-foot snipe on it and like bring it up to like 20,000? Or is it?
No, because the handle breaks at 75. So when you pull 75 on the handle, no matter where you grab it, you're going to pull 75 and it's going to put out 2,000.
Okay.
Okay. That makes sense. Sorry, I just had to ask if it was like a torque multiplier and you could like really give her, but.
No, I did a video on it. There's a spring inside the handle that a drive link pushes down. And then when it skips teeth, that spring pushes that drive link back up as fast as it can. And it's hitting that drive link, which is turning your anvil.
Cool.
But yeah.
Very neat.
I mean, it's really cool when you look at some of like the old technology from the 60s that we just take for granted now.
Yeah. So the original one was built back in the 40s when it was Curtis Wright Company when they were building the B-17 Flying Fortress. They built these to work on those.
That's cool.
You've seen those, those hammer impacts, right? Like they got a drive and then you just hold it and you just hammer it and it impacts.
Yeah.
Those things are pretty retro too.
I've got a screwdriver that works like that.
A screwdriver.
Yeah.
Impacting screwdriver.
I think you've put that one on a video, haven't you?
Yeah. You just hold the screwdriver, you hit it with a hammer and it does like a quarter and an eighth of a turn every time you hit it.
I feel like that would, like, if anything was rusted, it'd strip it pretty fast, but it's pretty sweet.
I don't know if it would, because you're forcing a metric fuck ton of downward force on it. I guess
it's very, there's a lot of downwards pressure, yes, but I mean, if it's rusted solid, those heads are pretty light.
I've used Phillips heads in that, because it comes with its own bits. It comes with impact screwdriver bits, but I've used the Phillips head bit that it comes with to take out hex heads.
And just beat the F out of them.
Yeah, you just go at it, and it'll come.
It'll go. She'll go. She'll.
Yeah, it'll become a Phillips head eventually.
Yeah, it will make. She went. Good cool. to know. Okay, awesome.
All right, man.
You were talking about doing your own podcast. Definitely, if you do that, we've done this with Dick Frost when he started his podcast. Like, we'll do one where we both record an episode, then we both, you know, you can post it, we can post it. Helps pump you guys up. So if you do that, let me know.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, it was all a right, great well, time, dude.
Coming on. That's awesome.